Welcome back to another episode of Palisade Radio. I am your host, Karema Mutlu. And on today's show, we have returning guest David Hunter, who's a contrarian macro strategist with a career spanning over four decades within the financial markets. Welcome back to the show, David.
Thank you, Karem. Glad to be here.
Let's begin by talking about gold and silver. Gold, as we speak today, which is the 27th of June, is over $1,400, and silver has yet to make a meaningful move. Talk to us about what you see for gold over the next few months. Back in January, you were calling for a far higher gold price, and today that looks like a fantastic call. And then talk to us about silver.
Sure. I am, at this point, still holding to my targets, which are $1,550, $1,600 for gold. I think we very well could be there by Labor Day, if not soon thereafter. And I think that should be the extent of the move. There's always a chance it breaks out above that and keeps going. But that was my long-held target going back quite a ways, and I see no reason to really change it at this point. Everything's in gear, and it looks good. Silver, I have had a target at the same amount of time that I had the $1,550, $1,600 target on gold. Silver, I'd been saying, could get back to $26. That's a much bigger move, obviously, from where it is. And it has lagged so far in the rally, but it has started to move up. What I think happens is as people become more enamored with gold, they will start looking at silver as the kind of the poor man's gold, and you'll see it start breaking higher. So I will stick to the 26. At this point, it looks like an aggressive call, but I think what we'll see is a catch-up rally in silver as gold moves higher. So that's pretty typical. Silver underperforms on the downside, and in rallies, silver outperforms gold. So I don't see any reason why that's not going to happen this time. I think the same will hold true for the miners.
Let's talk a little bit about cutting through the noise within the financial markets. On Twitter, you update your followers with suggestions on how the market is telling you what you need to know, not the talking heads or financial commentators. So can you give us your views on this? And is this a big part of the reason why a lot of investors lose money in the markets? Because they constantly look for confirmation bias rather than spending more time doing independent research. And I guess perhaps confirmation bias is the hardest element to overcome when speculating.
Sure. Yeah, I think confirmation bias is certainly a part of it. I think the biggest thing is that investors never seem to learn or don't understand the discounting nature of markets. So the media and talking heads will talk about the here and now, daily noise and weekly and monthly noise. They'll focus in on some narrative and they'll just keep repeating it ad nauseum. And people listen to that and say, okay, it becomes kind of the popular narrative, and it's hard for people to see through that. My point is that a lot of that gets discounted way before you realize it. And so you're dealing with things that are current news and current relevant topics, but the market's already moved on past them. And so people need to understand that just because something is a popular notion and seems obvious in the current environment doesn't mean that that's the direction the market's going to go. It may already be built into the market. And I think that's certainly been the case and is the case right now. All through this year, the S&P has climbed a wall of worry. In December, we had as much bearishness in many measures as we had back at the lows of 2008-09, and yet, the market wasn't all that far off highs. It was down 20% at its lows, but you would have thought the world was coming to an end like it did in 2008, and yet that wasn't the case. So that sentiment told me, you got an awful lot of bearishness built into the market. And then all through the first half of this year, there's been skepticism about the rally, and people were still kind of focused on the negative aspects that were brought out in the fourth quarter. You had an awful lot of people believing we had seen the highs in the market, and as it moved up towards those highs again, people would find levels where they said, okay, this is it. It's just a rally in a bear market. It's going to roll back over. Now that we're back and have made second top or back to the same highs we had back in the fourth quarter or September, October, you hear a lot about a double top and, a crash coming. So amazingly, we're, barely off the highs, and yet the majority of people out there think we're looking at, a major top in the market and much lower prices ahead. And I would just argue that you need to look past the talking heads. You need to understand sentiment is an important factor to go contrary to, and that a lot of things that seem obvious and clear today, looking backwards, will be really wrong when you look back 3 months from now. So just because it's popular, just because it seems logical, is not necessarily what the market's going to be responding to.
Excellent. I think that leads perfectly into my next question about a $10 oil price that you have forecast. And in our previous interview, you've talked about a coming deflationary bust. And I would assume this low oil price is the fallout from that. And generally, the consensus today isn't contemplating anything in that order. So can you give us some insights on how you view the current oil market?
Sure. Yeah, that's the nature of my approach to things. I'm a contrarian, and I look at bigger cycles. I focus certainly on shorter periods at times, but I also look at bigger cycles, and I do think that oil has peaked for this cycle. Back in the high 70s, I was pretty bearish then and said we could get down under 50, maybe even under 40 or down to 40, and that's kind of still my view, is that in the next several months, we should see something closer to $40. So we're kind of in trading territory now that we've rolled over, and we got up to the mid-60s and then rolled over again, got back down to 50. We're probably going to be in some sort of a trading pattern here this summer, but ultimately, I think we do fall to $40, and then from there, in a coming global bust, which I define as something that's not quite a depression because it'll happen fast, but more or less 2008-9 on steroids. So worse than 2008-9, similarly to 2008-9, a very rapid unwinding of assets and asset prices. I think that's coming in this next year and probably could arrive, the initial stages of it before the end of this year. And in that bust, which will be called a severe recession if you want, demand for oil will drop quite dramatically globally, and I think that'll be the driving force to oil falling all the way to $10. We got down to $26 in oil a few years back, and then mounted this rally that took us all the way back to the 70s, and now we're beginning the next leg down that I think will culminate in a move to a lower low down to $10. Won't be down there very long. People get upset with that number and say, oh, you're not going to see oil companies survive that. Well, certainly, leverage companies are going to be in trouble in that, but we won't be at 10 long enough to, really impact the wealth capitalized companies. And we go through this every once in a while where, the oil companies really have to hunker down and get through a period of very depressed pricing. So I'm pretty confident in my number. I could be wrong, and it could be 15 or 20 is a low point, but I'm thinking we're probably going to see 10 because of my view of what the bust will look like. I think we're looking at the first broad-based deflationary downturn since the Great Depression. So like I said, it's not going to be a drawn-out, decade-long depression, but it's going to feel like it while you're in it. And so a lot of asset prices pretty much across the board, equities, oil, copper, you name it, all the metals, everything's going to get hit hard. Probably the only two assets that don't get hit in the bust will be treasuries in the U.S. dollar. They will be benefits of the flight safety trade as people look for a place to hide. So, but across the board, an awful lot of other things are going to be down to levels we haven't seen in many years. So that's the extent of it. I get a lot of pushback on a number like that, as you can imagine. But I do feel comfortable with that as a long-term target. Probably be there, in the first half of next year. And then from there, oil can go the other way, and we'll have a long bull market. So that I view as the culmination of a bear market, not the beginning of something worse.
Very good. Okay, as we begin to wrap up the show, David, could you perhaps share with our listeners any financial books or authors that have shaped your outlook on the markets during your career? And is there anything else currently on your mind that you would wish to discuss?
Sure. In terms of books, early in my career, and basically I was a finance major undergrad and finance major with my MBA, so I was exposed to lots of financial books and investing books back then. And the real Bible, obviously, is Graham and Dodd. So, that was, helped shape my value orientation going all the way back. A book called Inside the Yield Curve by Leibowitz is a well-known book on Wall Street that really breaks down the bond market and the yield curve. And that was an impactful book for me early in my career. And then after that, I would say when I really started paying attention to the markets and how they respond, there was a book by David Dreeman, a well-known contrarian, that I probably read, within the first five or seven years of my career. And it was basically The Psychology of the Stock Market. I can't remember whether that was the title. He's written subsequent books from that that were similar, kind of revised versions of the same theme. And it really, I think it was a well laid out expose of markets and how much psychology plays a role in the market. And I would say that is me to a T now. I really believe why I'm a contrarian and why it's important to understand psychology in its relation to the markets is shaped by that book. After that, I would say, and not that many years or shortly after that, I read the book Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds by Charles Mackey. And again, it really exposes, going back through history, how markets are really a function of crowd psychology. And I recommend that book to everyone. And then finally, I would say a book, again, way back in my career that I read was a book called Investment Policy, How to Win the Loser's Game, and by a guy named Charles Ellis. And it really pointed out how the majority of investors are, suffer in trying to figure out the stock market. It's really something you can master, but you've really got to understand the discounting nature of markets and how often the herd gets things wrong. And it was just a really well laid out explanation of all of that. So you can see why I'm a contrarian. All those books kind of come from that angle. And I, to this day, thank God that I learned that early on in my career, because I think it's probably the most valuable lesson I could have ever gotten.
Excellent. Okay, well, thank you very much for your time today, David. Much appreciated.
You're very welcome, Graham. You have a good day.
Think you understand the junior mining sector, and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip your face off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw material. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on in Yemen?